What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. All right, so just real quick, in case you missed it in the last episode that we literally started 30 minutes ago, so I just said this 30 minutes ago, but just in case you missed it, and if you missed it on Instagram and all that, Cleo Smith, who is the little toddler that was missing in Western Australia, has been found safe and brought home, which is just amazing.
Yay.
So we're really happy, and I just wanted to share that again in case you didn't listen to last episode for some reason. But if you did that, go back and listen, because it was really good.
Yeah.
And also, before we get into today's case, I wanted to ask you all of our listeners, for any stories that you guys might have to share with us. So we may or may not be doing something related to those here soon. So we've posted it on Instagram and we've asked for it there, but I wanted to officially ask for listener stories on the podcast, because we've only kind of mentioned it in passing.
I know, I was like, when I posted the story, I was like, and you said that, I was like, shoot, did we not talk about it? Because I thought we talked about it, but maybe we didn't talk about it, because I have no brain.
We kind of just mentioned it, but we didn't officially ask for it. So
okay.
We have gotten, I think, one, so thank you to that person.
Yes.
But yeah, so if you have anything, true crime, like spooky or ghost stories, literally anything,
we want to hear it.
Send them our way.
Yeah.
You can send them to our email. That's the best way to get them to us. So our email is inhumanmonsterpod@gmail.com. And if you just put like listener story or something like that in the subject, so that we know that that's what it is.
Right.
And anything is fine. Nothing's too short or too long. Just send them our way and send them ASAP, because that might be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
All right. So today I am going to be covering the disappearance and murder of Molly Tibbetts. I think somebody mentioned this case on like one of my TikTok live streams or something just randomly. And I wrote it down. And when I started looking into it, I was like, okay, I need to cover this.
Yeah.
I originally started looking into it to just do like a short TikTok video on it, but when I started looking into it, I was like, nope, this needs a full podcast episode.
Yeah.
And yeah. One of the reasons that I wanted to cover it is because it happened in Iowa, and Iowa's very close to my heart. My grandpa actually grew up in Iowa, and he always used to talk about it. And my grandparents met at a college in Iowa called Grinnell College. And Molly was actually working at Grinnell, I think it's like Medical Center or something. I have it, I'll say it later. But when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, because my grandparents met there and talk about it all the time.
Aww.
And I actually asked my mom when I was doing these notes just to confirm that I was right and they met there. And she texted my grandma to make sure. And my grandma responded with like, yep, during our senior year, friends set us up on a blind date. And guess it worked out, because not too long after we got engaged. And I was just like, aw.
That's so cute.
So I just wanted to share that little story here. But that's neat. When I saw like Iowa and Grinnell, I was like, okay, I need to cover this. So here I am.
I've heard this, but it's been a long time. It's probably been like a couple years since I've heard the case. So I don't really remember all the details. Yeah. But I just, like, Googled her name, and she's, like, so pretty.
I know.
So sad.
It's pretty recent. It happened in 2018, but it was actually, the murderer wasn't sentenced until August 2021.
Okay.
So we'll get into all of that. And also, just real quick, before I get into it, this case got very politicized, and I'm mainly going to stay away from that. Like, that has no place on our podcast or in Molly's story.
Right.
So you'll kind of see what I'm talking about, but I just want to say I'm going to stay away from it. I'll share some of the facts about what happened, but I'm not going to get into the political side of it at all. If you want to do that, you can look it up yourself, but this podcast not is not important. The place for that.
Yeah.
All right. So Molly Cecilia Tibbetts was born to her parents, Rob and Laura, on May 8th, 1998. She grew up in San Francisco, California, until her parents divorced when she was in second grade. And at that time, she moved with her mom, her older brother Jake, and her younger brother Scott to Iowa. I don't know why they moved to Iowa. I don't know if they had family there or anything. I couldn't really find anything on that.
Yeah. Let's move
to Iowa. I mean, you would have had to have family or something because they moved to a super small town. It was about 70 miles east of Des Moines, and it's called Brooklyn, Iowa. And one stat that I found, at one point, it was like 1,400 people.
Wow. That's so tiny. That's like a high school.
Right. Exactly. So it was small. And although they were no longer living together, Molly's dad, Rob, did stay very close with her and her siblings. And he last saw Molly at his second wedding in June 2018. So in 2018, Molly was 20 years old and she was attending the University of Iowa studying psychology. In the summer of 2018, she was living with her longtime boyfriend, Dalton Jack, and his brother, Blake. And I think they'd been together for about 3 years at this point.
Okay.
So in the summer, Molly was preparing to go into her sophomore year of college, and she was working at a day camp at the Grinnell Regional Medical Center. And her friends and family describe her as a super happy, playful, positive person, and she was just extremely friendly and, you know, people loved her. She worked at a daycare, so you have to be a good person to work at a daycare.
Not true, but...
Okay.
You should be. You're right. You should be. And she looks like a delightful, very happy, positive person, so...
You have to be a good type of person if you want to choose to work at a daycare.
Right.
So on July 18th, 2018, Molly was actually home alone while her boyfriend and his brother were out of town. And it's reported that her boyfriend, Dalton, he was out of work in Dubuque, Iowa, which is over 130 miles away from Brooklyn, or about 2 hours away. So he was out of town, and that has been confirmed.
Okay.
Around 7:30 p.m. that night, Molly left the house to go for a run, which was something that she did often. She ran cross country in high school, so she would go out for runs. And around this time was the last time that Molly was seen by anybody. She did wear a Fitbit, and it shows that she did leave for this run. But it's super unclear when exactly the last communication from Molly came through.
Okay.
In one USA Today article, Dalton said that he had opened a Snapchat photo from Molly later that night that made it look like she was indoors. And then the family said that authorities said that she had gotten home.
Oh, okay.
So it's confusing because, like, a Snapchat could have been sent earlier and he could have opened it later. But... So I don't know, and that part's very confusing and very unclear about when exactly the last time anybody heard from her was, but the last time she was seen was around 7:30 when she left for the run.
Okay. You would think that, excuse me, that Snapchat would be able to tell when it was sent, too, but I know, like, those records take forever to...
Yeah, and they might have been, and it might have just not been reported.
Yeah.
I don't really know. Because most of the information on this case is after somebody was arrested. So it was hard to find stuff that happened in the search for Molly before.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next morning on July 19th, Molly did not show up for work at the daycare at Grinnell Medical Center. Her coworkers were concerned. They called Dalton to ask why she hadn't shown up for work. And he didn't know because he was out of town. Her family tried to contact her, and once nobody could get in touch with her, her mom, Laura, reported her missing. Volunteer searches for Molly did begin pretty quickly after that, but nothing was found in the immediate searches. On July 20th, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation joined in the search, and then 2 days after that, the FBI joined. So by this point, the volunteer searches were pretty much called off because the FBI and state investigators were taking over.
Okay.
There were hundreds of leads in the search for Molly. There were over 2,300 tips that came in, over 500 interviews were conducted, and the search was pretty much happening in, like, all different places.
Wow.
On July 26th, investigators got a lead, and they searched a pig farm in town that was about 15 minutes away from Brooklyn, where Molly lived, but they came up with nothing. On August 2nd, the Tibbetts family held a press conference and announced a $172,000 reward for anyone who could provide any information that would bring Molly home. The day after that, investigators held a news conference assuring the public that the search was still ongoing and they were doing everything they could. By August 7th, the reward fund had exceeded $300,000.
Wow.
And by the time Molly was found, it had grown to over $400,000.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. As the 1 month mark since Molly's disappearance approached, investigators shared that they had really been focusing on five different locations in Brooklyn. Her boyfriend's house, where she had been living, a car wash, a truck stop, a farm 3 miles from downtown Brooklyn, and then another farm 6 miles away. Eventually, in late August, investigators obtained footage of a black Chevy Malibu driving back and forth in the area where Molly was jogging on the night of July 18th. They were thankfully able to identify the driver of the vehicle, and they approached him without incident. On Tuesday, August 21st, in the early morning hours, a man named Christian Bahena Rivera, which I probably sound very white saying that, but he confessed to kidnapping and murdering Molly Tibbetts.
Like he came forward on his own accord?
They approached him because they found that his vehicle, but I don't think it was like a crazy long interrogation or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's great. That's good.
So he then led investigators right to Molly's body in a cornfield.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to now go through a little bit of background about him, and then I'll describe his account and recollection of what happened the night he killed Molly.
Okay.
Christian Bahena Rivera was born and grew up in Guerrero, Mexico. He moved to the U.S. in 2012, and at 17, he was working in Iowa as a farmhand. So he was not documented, and he was actually accused of illegally using false documents to obtain employment. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a second.
Okay.
He mainly spoke Spanish and was not at all fluent in English, but he was working on a farm in Iowa. In 2013, he met a high school student named Iris Manarez, and they began dating shortly after.
And how old was he?
He, at that time, would have been, like, 18.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. In 2014, Rivera was hired as a farmhand at Yarrabee Farms, which was a working dairy farm outside of Brooklyn. And he was working under the name John Budd. And that is how he received his paychecks, because he was not documented.
John Budd? Is that what you said?
Budd. B-U-D-D.
Okay. Sorry.
According to a CBS News article, quote, farm officials have said Rivera presented an out-of-state photo identification and a social security number when he was hired in 2014, and they believed he was the person depicted in those documents until his arrest last month, aka back when it happened.
Yeah.
So basically, the farm claims that they followed all legal requirements to examine his documents that he provided, and with that they determined that his name matched this social security number, and they can't discriminate against him by questioning and saying that's not your name or you don't look like a John Budd. Yeah. You know, if yeah, it they matches no they can only do so much. Yeah.
Yeah, even though like John Budd.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of laws to protect employees, and
yeah,
that's part of it. So
yeah. And they're in place for a reason. Yeah.
Yep. So according to them, they went through all the right legal hoops and they did what was right based on the information they had. However, the farm did not use the government's voluntary e-verify system that, quote, allows companies to confirm the identity and eligibility of employees to work in the U.S.
Okay, so cutting corners maybe a little bit?
Yes. It's unclear if running Rivera through this system would have brought any red flags, but it's still noted that they didn't use it, and it's a voluntary program, so, like, just freaking use it.
Yeah.
Yarrabee Farms claims that they used the Social Security Administration system to verify that the name and Social Security number he gave them matched. So, to me, and this is just what I got from it, it sounds like they confirmed that this name and this Social Security number match, but maybe the E-Verify thing would have been able to say, like, well, no, that person actually lives in somewhere else, or, you know, something like that.
Right. And there may have been, like, a picture to go along with it on the other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But they didn't do that. And just a little background on the farm. Yarrabee Farms was a small family-owned farm owned by Craig Lang and his son Dane Lang. Craig Lang was actually a political figure in Iowa, and he lost a close race in the GOP primary for agriculture secretary in June 2018. And I couldn't really find any updated information about if Yarrabee Farms was looked into anymore after Rivera was arrested. I'm guessing if it was, it was kept very quiet.
Right.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents were seen there in September 2018, but there are pretty much no reports after that, so we don't know if there was a formal investigation done or if they had just done what they were supposed to do, and, you know, technically they can't get in trouble for that because, you know, they did all the right things, so.
I would imagine they would have done some sort of investigation just because of the, like, kind of corner cutting that they did, because, you know, if there's one illegal person working there might be more than one, and that's where the problem lies, you know, with these companies and things. Like, so, yeah, they probably.
So, hopefully. But you also never know if it was.
You never know.
You know, political connections or something. You just never know.
Yeah.
But, so we don't know if there was an investigation done. We don't know what the outcome was, but that's neither here nor there. I just wanted to give a little bit of background on the farm and kind of what was happening. So, Rivera was working at Yarrabee Farms in Iowa under the name John Budd. In 2015, him and his girlfriend, Iris, had a daughter, but the next year the couple separated.
Mm-hmm.
He was 24 years old and still working at Yarrabee Farms in 2018 when he encountered Molly. So the next account is what Rivera told detectives in August 2020 after they identified him as the driver of the car. Oh, sorry, not August of 2020. August of 2018.
I was going to say, I was like, did you mean like August 20th?
No. August 2018.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
So on July 18th, 2018, Rivera was out driving his black Chevy Malibu when he noticed Molly out running. According to the criminal complaint, Rivera told detectives that he then got out of his car and started running alongside Molly. Molly, who was obviously freaked out, apparently grabbed her phone and told him that she was going to call the police, and that made Rivera extremely mad. According to him, he got very upset and blacked out, which happened to him often when he would get really upset. He told investigators after getting angry, he does not remember anything that happened until he finally came to as he pulled up to an intersection. So he told detectives that he rode up to a cornfield and then realized he had earpieces in his lap, which I'm assuming I think are like headphone pieces.
Yeah.
So Rivera said when he saw those in his lap, he realized that Molly was in the trunk of his car. And he told detectives that he then pulled her out of the trunk, saw that she was bleeding from the side of her head, and then proceeded to drag her from his vehicle out to a remote location in the cornfield.
That sounds like a huge cop-out to me. I'm sorry. I blacked out because I was so angry and came to with headphones in my lap and remember there's a potential dead body in my trunk? No, sir. No.
From a USA Today article talking about the complaint, quote, he told officials he then put her over his shoulder and took her 20 meters into the cornfield where he covered her with some corn stalks and left her face up in the field. So Rivera still continued to claim that he did not remember what happened between when Molly, you know, said she'd call the police and he got angry and when he pulled up to the cornfield. So this is what he's telling police in August 2018 after they identify him as driving a vehicle seen driving around the same time in the area that Molly had been running.
Okay.
So on August 21st, investigators had finally found Molly. After leading investigators to Molly's body that day, Rivera was charged with first-degree murder, and the next day his bond was set to $5 million.
Wow. Good.
On August 23rd, the autopsy came back and ruled that the cause of death was, quote, multiple sharp force injuries. So, like, stab wounds, but they didn't...
Not with a knife, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't read the autopsy I was going to, but I didn't even know if I'd be able to find it. Yeah. And it's not super important in this case.
Right.
But it wasn't like a gunshot or strangulation. It was some sort of stabbing with something.
Okay.
And then they determined that the manner of death was homicide. This same day, the Iowa Department of Transportation confirmed that Rivera did not have any type of state-issued ID. So up until this point, you know, they didn't necessarily know that he was undocumented.
Right.
On August 24th, Rivera's relatives privately obtained Chad and Jennifer, and I don't know how to say the last name, but had obtained these lawyers privately to represent him in court. On September 19th, Rivera pled not guilty to the charge of first-degree murder.
Why? Tell me why. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you definitely murdered her. You admitted to it, whether you want to recount the details or not. Yeah, you're guilty.
Yep. So his criminal trial was actually delayed multiple times because of just varying things. And then the COVID pandemic kept delaying it even more. So on May 17th, 2021, his trial finally began. And he actually testified on day 6 of his trial. And when I read about his testimony, whew, I got mad.
Blood boiling? Yeah.
I'm
looking at a picture of this dude, and he has dead eyes. Dead.
Yeah, he does.
They are dead.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So remember, previously he had told police that he...
blacked out.
Saw Molly running.
Yeah.
And then blacked out and didn't remember what happened, and then found himself at a cornfield.
And why was he running beside her? Why?
Yeah.
He had no business being there, sir.
No, he was, like, trying to pursue her, and she didn't... She turned him down and said, no, I'm going to call the police if you don't leave me alone, and he freaked out. But... So, he testified at his trial, and this was his story. So, he said that he had been showering on the night of July 18th at his trailer at Yarraby Farms when he came out of the shower and found two random men with face coverings standing in his living room.
Okay, here we go.
So he claimed that the larger man had a gun and the smaller man had a knife, and he said the men forced him into his car, making him drive, as the man with the knife sat in the front seat and the man with the gun sat in the back seat. Rivera claimed that the men then saw Molly running and told him to drive past her 3 or 4 times before making him stop the car. Quote, he then testified that the man with the knife got out of the car, was gone for 10 to 12 minutes before returning to the car, and that he heard the man in the back seat whispering to himself, come on, Jack.
Okay. I guess he concocted this story while he was sitting in his jail cell.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So Rivera then said that the two men made him drive again a bit further and then made him stop and hand over his keys. Then apparently the two men got out of the car, opened the trunk, and then closed the trunk and instructed him to drive to a cornfield. The men then left, and Rivera claimed that he went to check his trunk to see what they had done in the trunk and saw Molly's body. So he said he then... drove up further in the cornfield, dumped Molly's body, and covered her with corn. And he said that he saw the two men running down the road away from the scene and that he never saw them again. And he claimed, quote, I remembered they said if I did anything, they were going to do something to my family, my ex-girlfriend, and my daughter.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. That's not
real. He's basically saying two men forced me to drive them around. They killed Molly, put her in my trunk, and then said I can't tell anyone because they're gonna kill my family.
And then he later admitted to killing her. Okay.
Well, he was telling the story after
right.
he had talked to police, admitted to killing her, and took police to her body.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So
okay,
you can actually watch the trial online, and I found the day six video with Rivera giving his testimony on KCRG, and I'll link it in the notes if you want to watch. I watched part of it, but I just couldn't keep going. But if anybody really likes that type of stuff, I'll link it in the show notes so you guys can watch it yourself.
I'm sure it's entertaining. I'm sure it's very entertaining.
Yeah. So that was his story of what happened that night. But just 9 days after the trial began, on May 28th, 2021, Christian Bahena Rivera was found guilty of first-degree murder and was ordered to be held without bond until his sentencing.
Praise be.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine being her family sitting in that courtroom hearing that bullshit?
I know.
I would have flew into a fit of rage.
I know.
Ugh.
I know, and her mom is amazing. I'm going to play a victim impact statement from her for you guys because, like, she's so incredible.
Yeah.
So, in late July 2021, a week before Rivera was to be sentenced, his attorneys asked for a retrial as they claimed that new evidence pointed to a possible new suspect.
Oh, really? God damn it.
So they said that two new witnesses came forward alleging that another man named Gavin Jones had admitted to killing Molly. So the first new witness, whose name was Arnie Mackey, he was at the time incarcerated on domestic violence charges. And he allegedly approached prison officials back in May when he heard Rivera's testimony in trial on TV. And he said that he had information that corroborated parts of Rivera's testimony. And he also claimed that another inmate that he knew from a different jail, named Gavin Jones, had once claimed to him that he had killed Molly. So according to Mackey, Gavin Jones had seen Molly being held captive at a, quote, trap house, and had then gone to help murder her.
Okay. They sound like, no offense to anyone, but they sound like drug addicts just trying to get attention. That's my assumption there.
So the second new witness, Lindsay Voss, she came forward shortly after Mackey did, and she claimed to be Gavin Jones' ex-girlfriend. And she said that in the previous month, she had been with Jones when he, quote, he allegedly pointed a gun at her and exclaimed, "That Mexican shouldn't be in jail for killing Molly Tibbetts because I raped her and killed her."
Did they ever confirm that she had been raped?
Nope. They did not. At least not publicly.
Why would people admit to something if they didn't do it?
I will never understand that.
Ever understand. That's like some serious mental illness. That's what that is.
Yeah, it is. It's narcissistic.
It is very narcissistic. That's exactly what I was about to say.
So at the time that this all came out, Gavin Jones denied any involvement in Molly's death. And he said, I forget which news outlet I got this from.
He's like, but not me, man.
Yeah. And he had said in the one article that I read about this, he was basically like, "You guys are the first ones to reach out to me. I didn't know that this was happening. And I haven't spoken to investigators yet, but I want to because I want to clear my name because this isn't true."
Good.
And I don't know if they ever, like, officially cleared him, but you'll find out in a little bit, like, nobody believed this.
Okay.
So, aside from those two new witnesses, in this request for a retrial in July 2021, the defense also claimed that the state had withheld a lot of this information. So, of course, the state denied this, and they said that the defense could have requested a continuance during the May 2021 trial when the new witnesses emerged, but that they had declined. Because remember, these new witnesses apparently came forward in May, and that was before this trial ended. So,
right.
In the request for retrial, the defense also tried to tie Molly's death to other sex trafficking cases in the area. So according to the Des Moines Register, quote, "At a lengthy hearing on July 27th, they argued that Tibbetts' death might have been connected to another woman's alleged sex trafficking in a neighboring county, as well as the May 2021 disappearance of 11-year-old Xavier Harlson of Montezuma." So they're basically like trying to find any other potential tie that they right. could tie Molly's death to.
And if she was, I mean, I would think if she was sex trafficked, they wouldn't have found her dead, you know?
Exactly.
So A plus B equals Z. I don't know.
Yeah, apparently.
Jeez.
They also argued that prosecutors had failed to turn over favorable evidence related to a 2019 investigation into a man accused of sex trafficking in a nearby county. So, from a Supreme Court case called Brady v. Maryland, prosecutors are obligated to provide any evidence that could favor the defense. So, like, they're required to provide that.
Okay.
So, that was the last thing that they tried to pull in this request for a retrial. But despite all of this, on August 2nd, Judge Joel Yates denied the motion for a retrial. So first of all, he said, quote, had both versions of events been presented at trial, the jury would have had to make a credibility determination, not between the state's witness and those of the defense, which is a typical scenario, but between the defendant and his own witness. Because Rivera testified a different story than what these new witnesses are saying.
Yeah.
The judge also denied for the request for the Brady violation because for that to happen, the evidence must be material to the question of guilt. And in this case, there's no reason to believe that any other evidence would have changed the trial's outcome. So the judge said, quote, defendant's trial strategy included casting doubt onto other individuals such as Dalton Jack. It is doubtful that adding another possible suspect, one with no apparent ties besides being in the same county as Molly, would have had a reasonable probability of changing the result of the trial. So, this judge is awesome. He denied a request for a new trial, and the court set a new sentencing date for Rivera to be August 30th, 2021. And on that day, Christian Bahena Rivera was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Good.
Judge Joel Yates said at the sentencing, Mr. Bahena Rivera, you and you alone forever changed the lives of those who loved Molly Tibbetts.
Yep.
So Molly's mom, Laura, read a victim impact statement to the court at the sentencing, and I'm going to play it here for you guys. It's about 6.5 minutes, but I think it is just so powerful, and I think it's so important to hear. So her mom really did an amazing job with it, and I'm just so glad that they got justice for their daughter.
Yeah,
and
too.
I'll also post a photo of Rivera listening to this statement. I'll post that on our Instagram. He has a mask on, so you can't really see his emotions, but it just made me so mad watching him listening to this and just being like you said, Andrea, like dead eyes, like whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm going to share that on our Instagram so you guys can go see that while you listen to this part.
Mr. Rivera, I come here today not because I feel the need to address you. However, I come here to give a voice to our daughter, granddaughter, sister, girlfriend, niece, cousin, and friend, Molly Cecilia Tibbetts. Molly was a young woman who simply wanted to go for a quiet run on the evening of July 18th, and you chose to violently and sadistically end that life. I want to address the chain of events you set off on the morning of August 18th after you led authorities to Molly's remains in a cornfield. Do you know what it's like, Mr. Rivera, to be woken up by your youngest son, Scott, telling you the sheriff needs to talk to us? Scott and I stood in the entrance of our home where sheriffs Tom Kriegel and Matt Mushman stood with tears in their eyes. It took them a minute to find the words to say, we hoped for a different result. However, we found Molly's remains today. I thanked them for their service and they left because there was still a lot of work to be done. I led Scott, whose eyes were brimming with tears, to the living room and sat him down on the couch. Scott, I said, I am so sorry. I'm going to call Aunt Billy over to the house to be with you because Mom has a lot of work to do. Next, I needed to tell my son, Jake. Jake was in his apartment in Iowa City, and I did not want him to hear that his sister was not coming home on the news. Knowing my sister Kim was headed to Iowa City for work, I called her and said, Kim, they found Molly's remains this morning, and I need you to pick Jake up and bring him home. It was a race against the clock to notify all the people who cared so deeply for Molly that she was not coming home. It was very important to notify the people who cared deeply about Molly so they did not hear this on the news. Imagine what it's like to call Molly's father, Rob, who resides in Fresno, California, and say, Rob, I am so sorry to have to tell you this, but they found Molly's remains this morning, and I need you to come back to Iowa. Can you imagine, Mr. Rivera, as a father, having Paulina's mother taken away from you and to have to tell your daughter that she will never come home? However, the most difficult person to tell was Molly's grandmother and my mother, Judy Calderwood. Judy truly believed her granddaughter would be found alive, because who could harm such a beautiful, vibrant young woman so full of life and promise? Who could harm Judy's precious granddaughter, let alone brutally murder her and dump her body in a cornfield? This was heartbreaking news that needed to be delivered in person. I entered my mother's home, and she greeted me with a big smile and asked if I wanted a cup of coffee. There certainly was no easy way to tell her the news. However, it had to be done before her phone started ringing with loved ones sending their condolences. I very quietly and softly said, Mom, I have some bad news. They found Molly's body this morning, but we know where she is now. Judy Calderwood's unwavering faith had been brutally shattered by your senseless act of violence. Can you imagine, Mr. Rivera, sitting across the table from your madre and telling her Paulina is never coming home? I am aware that you know Ulysses Felix Sandoval and his family. Yuli, as I call him, was a classmate and a friend of my son Scott. Do you know Yuli was at the press conference where authorities announced that you, Christian Bahena Rivera, had been charged with the murder of Molly Tibbetts? Yuli immediately started crying, but knew that he needed to call his madre before she heard it on the news. The Felix Sandoval family was devastated. How could this young man they fed and fostered be responsible for such a heinous crime? Do you know, Mr. Rivera, that Yuli's parents had to leave Brooklyn because they were receiving death threats? Do you know Yuli lived in our home for his last year of high school so he could finish his senior year and play sports? However, Yuli's parents did not get to experience his senior year with him because of your senseless act. Because of your act, your then employer, Craig Lane, lost all his employees because those workers were afraid of what would happen to them. Because of your act, Dalton Jack will never get to give Molly the engagement ring he had purchased for her. Because of your act, Molly's father, Rob, will never get to walk his only daughter down the aisle. Because of your act, Mr. Rivera, I will never get to see my daughter become a mother. I do hope one day Paulina has the opportunity to become a mother, but how will she ever explain to her children who their grandfather is? This is the legacy you left behind for your only child, Mr. Rivera. I don't know whose situation is worse.
Thank you.
Isn't she, like...
To have kept it so composed...
I know.
That's remarkable. Like, she had some anger in her. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I can think.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that it made him feel like shit.
It doesn't seem like it did, but I also hope that it made him feel like shit.
I mean, how can it not? Like, I mean, he's clearly, like, a sociopath, but how can it not just, like, hearing that and her referencing his daughter?
Yeah, that would kill me, but...
Yeah. So, I wanted to share that because she's freaking incredible, and, you know, I'm just so glad that Molly got justice. And her family can have peace knowing that her murderer will rot in prison.
And never get out.
Yeah. So he was sentenced to life in prison. He is currently incarcerated at the Iowa State Penitentiary. Thank you. Which is a maximum security prison in Fort Madison, Iowa. And that is the case of Molly Tibbetts. Shortly after she was found, her friends started an online group to encourage others to be kind to one another. They called it the Molly Movement. So in honor of Molly, I am reminding you all to be kind to each other. And that is all I got for today, you guys. I will be sharing photos of beautiful Molly on our Instagram, which is at inhuman_podcast. You can also join our Facebook group where we post all of our cases so everyone can discuss about them. So that's on Facebook at Inhuman Podcast. I know that this was a tough story, but I'm so glad that her killer was convicted.
Yeah.
Because that just seems to not happen very often.
No. And the fact that he had life without the possibility of mm-hmm. parole is... It's shocking. It should always be like that, in my opinion. And for some ungodly known reason, it often is not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have opinions on it, but I'm not going to state those right now. It's not important. But, yeah, that was a very sad story, but I'm glad that he is going to rot.
Exactly. So... That's it, you guys. Just remember, if you guys have case suggestions or a personal story, please send them our way at inhumanmonsterpod@gmail.com. And we will see you on Thursday with another case. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.